20 minutes a day, 365 days a year. This is the Pack-A-Day Podcast.
Welcome in, everybody, to another edition of the Pack-A-Day Podcast. Thanks again for joining us today on the Saturday. My name is Dan Kotnick, and one more time here on the Saturday. I know that we promised it last week, so I swear this is the last time we're here, us three together. I swear. Don't worry, everybody. You don't need to turn it off right now. It's the last time. It's me with my two guys that I've been with all draft month long. It's Paul Bredel and Mark Eckel. Gentlemen, how are you doing? Welcome back. And how is the weather out there?
I mean, up here in Green Bay, I would categorize it pretty similarly to the Packers draft. Unspectacular, but very solid. It's been sunny in 50s here, so we'll take it.
I like that. I think that's the new way we talk about weather now, is we relate it to like a player on the Packers or Packers news. It's as long as you don't have Aaron Rodgers level.
Yeah, I was going to say it's not below 30 and snowing. So I guess in that regard, it's not the same. But
yeah, Mark, how about you?
It's beautiful here. It's like the Packers' first three picks. So I think. Just great. It's been great. Paul, I thought you were going to go with the Rodgers stuff and say it was storming up in.
Yeah, no, I know. Yeah. I'm trying to stay on the positive side of things since. Well,
I know we're supposed to analyze the Packers' two fifth round picks today. I'm tired. I'm tired of reading about it now. I mean, now everything changes, and I'll say this: I trust AJ Hawk, John Kuhn, and James Jones. And I'm a writer. I was in this business 30 years, and I know a lot of writers personally. I was involved with stuff with the Eagles. But I'll trust A.J. Hawk, John Kuhn, and James Jones more than anyone covering this story. That's all I'm going to say about that.
Because they actually more than Brett Favre.
Rodgers, how about that? You know what I'm saying? Like, they've actually talked to the guy that everyone's talking about.
Right.
When John Kuhn says there's a 70% chance that Rodgers is back, and some talking head on ESPN says there's a 5% chance, well, I'm going to go with Kuhn over the guy on ESPN. And, you know, when A.J. Hawk is asked point blank, where do you think Aaron Rodgers is going to play next year? And he says Green Bay. Well, I'll take A.J. Hawk over some guy on NFL Network. I'm just saying. And the players could be wrong, and all the people could be right. But like I said, I trust scouts on the draft. I trust scouts and general managers more than I do, you know, the Mel Kuypers. And I like Mel, but those people that do draft stuff, well, same thing. I'll trust people that actually know Aaron and talk to him over guys just talking about him. And now we can talk about the fifth round pick.
the stuff that the whole football world should be talking about, the Packers fifth round picks, the game changers.
Well, I'm hoping that you guys did 1 through 4 ahead of us, right? The other podcasters did this all week.
Right. Yeah. Right. So we're
lucky.
Yeah. So we got the fifth round picks here, like Mark said. So that means that we are talking about pick 173 and pick 175. That is to Darryl Slayton from Florida, the defensive tackle, and Shamir John Charles, the cornerback from Appalachian State. So fifth round, guys, double dipping on the defense again, specifically at 175, double dipping in the cornerback position, which is, I think, what we all kind of expected. I mean, really – This is perfect for us because these are the two position groups that we got to break down earlier this month, and it really kind of played out exactly how we thought it might. That Brian Gutekunst probably wouldn't touch defensive tackle until day three at the earliest, if he did at all, and would probably double dip into the cornerback position. So really, day five kind of fits our group perfectly, doesn't it?
Yeah, absolutely.
So let's start with number 173. To Darryl Slayton, he's the one that I think out of these two really, I don't know if like excites me as much, but I think that he, like out of these two guys, I'm more excited to see what he can do on the field, because you know the cornerback group, there are already at least, you can guarantee, three people ahead of John Charles automatically, and probably, you know, one or two more depending on how things kind of play out in camp and everything. But Slayton has a chance to be a guy that he's not going to see stuff right away, but I think that his impact on the team can probably happen a little bit quicker than maybe a John Charles.
Absolutely. So if we go back to when we discussed the defensive line class as part of our podcast here for draft month, I said that I wanted a big nose tackle in the middle. This wasn't someone that I mentioned. However, he fits that skill set to a T. Slayton is a zero tech, A gap run stuffer, which, as I talked about previously, I think is a must for this defense. That's going to be an important role in this Joe Barry defense, and it's going to allow them to move Kenny Clark around, because prior to the selection, Clark was really the only one that you could put at that nose position and fill that role well. Now they have some flexibility to move Clark around a little bit. If you can get Clark out on the edge in space, off of those double teams, it's scary to say, but he has the potential to make even more of an impact. And someone like Slayton, he's not going to fill the stat sheet by any means from a pressure standpoint or even a tackle standpoint. He's someone who occupies defenders, he takes up space, and his teammates, they feel the benefit of that. I already mentioned Kenny Clark, but that's also going to benefit the edge rushers, and that's going to benefit the linebackers as well. Now, I will say he's only has one year under his belt as a starter in 2020. He needs to improve his consistency, work his repertoire for those secondary moves, refine his technique. But from a skill set standpoint and athleticism standpoint, and it's a day three pick as well, so that you take that as it is. It's a day three selection. That's not someone that you expect to come in and make a huge impact right away by any means, but he has that skill set, the athleticism to grow into a role that's very important for this Packers defense.
Mark, what's your take on Slate when he first got picked?
I liked it a lot. I actually, you know, we talked about defensive in the interior defensive line, and we said it was the worst group in years. And we, you know, we went over that. I wrote about that for the Cheesehead draft guide. And I had him higher than a lot of guys that went before him. I thought, as Paul was saying, he is what he is. He's a big old run stopping 3-4 nose tackle. So he's with the perfect team. I had him as the top. I had him and the kid from LSU, Sheldon, pretty even as the best pure nose tackles for a 3-4. I didn't know if he'd still again. And like Paul said earlier as well, none of us wanted the Packers to go early on defensive tackle. They had other needs. None of them are, I didn't think any of them, even the guys that went day two, I wouldn't have taken them. I just didn't want to. The Packers, this is crazy. They did everything. Like, it's almost like they listened to me. I mean, they never listened to me. I never get what I want out of the draft. I'm not saying they drafted well. They've gotten some very good players that I didn't think of or didn't think they'd be there. They did. I mean, I can't complain about what happens to this draft, because they got a corner, a wide receiver, and offensive lineman the first three picks. That's exactly what I wanted. Fourth round, that's probably the pick I like the least, but not out of mind. Another offensive lineman, fine. I wanted a big defensive tackle in the fifth round. They got me maybe the biggest. He's a big boy now. He can, you know, and again, he's another. This draft, other than the next kid we're going to talk about, power conference, big time school, winning team. You know, they got another SEC guy, Florida. You know, they didn't mess around this year with, you know, you got Georgia, you got Ohio State, you got Clemson, you got Florida. I mean, it's like they went through the final poll of the colleges. Okay, we'll take one from there, one from there, one from there. You know, they marked off all the top teams in the country. So I do like this pick. And I mean, not only can he maybe, like you said, they'll move Clark around. Well, what they'll also do, hopefully, maybe not right away, but hopefully by the end of the year, Kenny Clark plays too many snaps some games. Mm-hmm. Like, we know when that snap count comes out on Mondays, and you see, like, Clark played, like, 80%. That's too much. He needs – and that'll keep him fresher not only for that game but for the year. You know, if Clark can shave 10 to 20 plays a game off his body, that's going to make him a lot better come week 16 or week 18 now even, right? and in the playoffs, hopefully, right? I mean, the less wear and tear on him during the season, the fresher he'll be at the end of the season. So this guy can do that as well. I look at him as a step up from the Lancaster, who, listen, as an undrafted guy, has carved out a pretty good niche for himself. But this guy could – I mean, again, this was not a good defensive tackle draft. But like we said when we broke him down, there's going to be a guy, and let's hope it's this guy, Slayton. One of these guys is going to be better than everybody thinks, whether it's Slayton, Shelvin, Bobby Brown. One of them is going to say, you know, in 3 years, we're going to look back and say, hey, that was a really good pick that so-and-so made in the fourth or fifth or sixth round, wherever they got a guy. So, you know, he's in a good spot. The right team drafted him. They play a scheme that should fit his skills. And, you know, if he's just out there on, you know, he's not going to be out there on passing downs because he really gives you not much at all as a pass rusher. He's not going to get a lot of sacks. But he's going to stop that. He's going to make it so second down's a passing down a lot of times, you know. So it's second and nine or third and eight. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, and then hopefully the next guy we talk about can help there.
One other thing that I wanted to add, because, Mark, you brought up Slayton and Tyler Shelvin as your top two nose tackles. Was that correct?
Yes.
The one big difference.
Pure nose.
Pure nose, yep. The one big difference between those two is their athleticism. So we mentioned that Slayton has a size 6'5", 340, and he was actually down, I think I saw 25 pounds from the 2020 season at Florida. His RAS score was, I believe, 7.5. That's not exact. I don't have it in front of me, but that's the ballpark. Shelvin, on the other hand, he's 6'2", 350. His RAS was 1.28. So you got a big body, but you go through and watch him. You read the pre-draft reports on him. Everyone notes his strength and the athleticism that he brings to the position at that size, which 6'5", 340, that's pretty big.
Yeah, it's big and it's scary. Like, to have, I mean, that, and that's, you know, like exactly what Mark just said. You're kind of just really expecting him to be a bit of an upgrade from a Lancaster, basically. And with the way that the depth of this position group was this year and where he's picked in the draft, he's not expected to come in and be a game changer. And I kept hearing that from my family the entire weekend. We need a guy to pit with Kenny Clark. We need a guy to pit with Kenny Clark. You can't just say that and expect it to happen. Like, if there's not a guy like this in the draft to fill that role, it's just not going to appear because you're expecting it to, because you need it to happen. The Packers needed to get a guy that could basically be a younger Snacks Harrison, a guy that's going to come in, be a big body, and take up 10 to 15 snaps from Kenny Clark and not get his lunch eaten every single time. You know, you just need him to be there in front of – you just need him to get in the way. That's the end of the day. And he'll get in the way with that size and that athleticism. And that's all you're hoping for, is you've taken the lottery ticket and hoping that you've gotten the next Snacks Harrison. If he becomes just a slight upgrade over Lancaster, I think then the pick works out. It's a fifth round pick. You're not expecting a lot out of that. So I think, you know, is it the best player to have on the field? Probably not, but I think it's the best that the Packers were going to be able to do with the way that the draft was this year and the way everything has kind of played out. It fits the system and it fits the role and it fits just everyone. It's the perfect combination of everyone's fit together for it to work out. So Slayton, that first round or the first pick in the fifth round at 173. And Mark, kind of go ahead, Mark.
I was going to say, I know Paul, I always go to Paul for that athletic score thing, and I think he did every player in the draft. But with that athleticism, I said he's not going to give you anything on passing downs, not right away, but with that kind of athleticism combined with good coaching, And I think the Falcons' D-line coaches are pretty good. He may develop into, again, he's not going to be a 8-10 sack guy ever, I don't think, but he can develop into a 4-5 sack guy maybe, or at least a guy that, you know, collapses the pocket and gets a little pressure, and then boom, here comes Gary for the sack or whatever. I'm going to use this name because this guy, I believe he, I don't know if he was drafted and then was cut and the Packers picked him. Could he be a quasi Gilbert Brown?
I mean, I hope so.
Wow.
No one thought Gilbert Brown when he was drafted. No, and when the Vikings cut, I mean, who thought Gilbert Brown would be Gilbert Brown, right? When the Packers picked him up, it was like, oh, they picked up some big old, you know, Gilbert Brown turned into him. And that was kind of his job on that defensive line was, you know, Reggie White and Sean Jones, Santana Dotson, they were making the plays, but Gilbert was taking up, you know, a lot of room. And like you said, he did more than get in the way, but he took on a couple guys that made it easier for, you know, Reggie and Santana and Sean Jones.
I think that's a really good point about the athleticism and then the upside that that brings as a pass rusher. This year at Florida, his 1 year as a starter, he still had 3 sacks. He had 18, 19 pressures. So like I said, that's not an overwhelming amount, or that part of his game at this point in his career isn't going to leap off the screen to you consistently. But it's not like he doesn't have that potential either. And I think that Mark made a great point there. With that upside that he brings as a pass rusher, because he's shown in flashes that he already can do it. So with some refinement, some NFL coaching, I think that that is absolutely in play. So while we describe him right now as a run stuffer, basically a space eater, that doesn't mean that he can't grow into a larger role. So, I mean, let's get him a black visor, some elbow pads, and a neck roll and throw him out there.
I mean, let's put it this way, too. If he had 8 sacks and a bunch of pressures at Florida, he wouldn't have been there at pick 173. He'd have been around, you know? So there's a reason he felt it. That was the problem with this group of defensive linemen, as we talked about a couple weeks ago. There really wasn't a complete – there were some guys that had a little bit of pass, but they weren't big enough to, you know, people didn't think – by NFL standards, they weren't big enough to play inside. Then there was a lot of guys like Slayton, Shelvin, that, you know, they were big run stuffers, but they didn't show a lot of pass rush. So, you know, this is where the scouts looking ahead and then your coaching staff developing guys. Like I said, one of these guys, I would bet whatever you wanted to bet me on it. One of these guys taken in the 4th or 5th round is going to turn out in 3 years is going to be like, wow, that guy, what a good pick that was. And let's just hope it's this guy.
Yeah. And I think a part of the reason, too, he was on day 3 is because, like you said, it's that one-dimensional. Teams aren't going to, or I should say teams shouldn't be, spending top 100 premium draft picks on defensive linemen who aren't effective as pass rushers as well.
Not the way to play the game today. Right?
Nope.
So, but the Packers have a guy like that in Kingsley Keke. He's your
– right.
You know, if you could put those two together – and split time up a little bit, you know, that's our thing. If he takes some snaps from some early down snaps off of Kiki's plate, that makes him even more, you know, more effective on passing downs and later in the game and all that, you know. So overall, I thought it was one of many good picks the Packers made in this draft.
I think it just goes back to fit, you know, and I think that's so – it's going on a soapbox here for the hot second, but it goes into so much. It plays such a big factor into how a lot of these players turn out. Slayton, if he's put into this situation where he's not being expected to be, you know, to play outside of his role right away and can develop, and maybe he becomes, you know, he becomes a little bit more productive in the, you know, in the run game, and then he's developing more, he becomes a great pick. But if he goes to a different situation, like what you guys are saying, where he, you know, he's being placed outside of his skill set, then it doesn't work out as well, and it's seen as a bust pick. And so, you know, when people talk about, well, we could have done this and this and had these, it doesn't always work out like that. Sometimes it's about finding guys that fit your situation and are going to develop into that, rather than just getting the guy that turned out good over here. And why didn't you just do this? That's what makes it so, this is the part that makes it so in depth when it comes to drafting. You can't just, it's not Madden where you get to pick and plug, you know, different players into the middle. Sometimes it takes finding a Slayton like this that you hope can fit into the right situation and develop into something more. It's a lot more than that. I think kind of relates to our second guy here in the fifth round too, just two picks later at 175, Shamar John Charles, the cornerback out of Appalachian State, the fifth year senior, a bit of an older guy. He's a little undersized, definitely doesn't fit kind of that profile of what the Packers are, but I think it's another one where they're hoping that kind of the skill set will develop and he's going to get put into the right situation and maybe develop into something a little bit more. But Paul, just your first opinions on John Charles.
Yeah, so there was a really good article by Zach Cruz over at Packers Wire out on Friday where there was a quote from Brian Gutekunst, and Goody basically said that throughout as the fifth round was unfolding and the Packers were waiting and waiting, several of his scouts kept poking him saying, Gene Charles is still there. Gene Charles is still there. This is a guy that the scouts really, really wanted. And I think that says a lot about him that you have a number of the scouts in the war room with Goody and LaFleur and everyone else just almost, you know, as they say, you know, pounding their fists on the table for this guy. And he really goes against, from an athletic standpoint, a size standpoint, what the Green Bay Packers typically covet. Like you said, Dan, he's 5'10", so a little on the shorter side from what they typically look for at cornerback. His relative athletic score was around 5 or even a little below, and 5's average. And typically when you're on day 3, that's especially where you see teams really stick to those athletic traits, because at this point you know you're getting a raw prospect, but you want that athletic upside. So in that regard, he really bucks the trend, goes against the grain for them. But like I said, he's someone that the scouts are pounding the table for. He's a 2-year starter, had a particularly really good 2020 season, only allowed a completion percentage of 33% and had 17 pass breakups. 17, that's a lot, folks. He was primarily a boundary corner at Appalachian State, but from the sounds of it, he's going to come in and compete. That might not be right away. Again, he's a day 3 pick for that slot role with Chandon Sullivan, whether it's this year or down the road. But he's someone that I really like because of the upside, and he brings a physical approach to the cornerback position, and they needed to address the slot position for the long haul. Like I said, not necessarily this year. And a big part that he can contribute right away in is special teams. Over at the Draft Network, they called him a special teams ace. He's someone who from day one will hopefully help revitalize this very, very, very struggling, I'll say, to put it nicely, Packers special teams unit.
Yeah, we hope so. Mark, what do you think about him?
Now, Paul, you know I compliment you often on your stories on for the 100 place that you work for. You buried the lead on this one. That's what he is. He's going to be a special teams guy.
Yep.
That's what he's going to come in and help with. And let's be honest. Packers need to help on special teams.
Big time.
But firing the coach was one thing. I mean, but you still, you know, the coach doesn't deserve all the blame. They had some bad special teams players last couple of years, especially, you know, we talked about it all during the year. You got scared sometimes on punts and kickoffs and stuff, you know. So I think this guy's going to come in right away and be, an ace. That's a great word. If he's one of the better guys on special teams, that's going to be a good thing. They took another guy later on. I don't want to steal some of the podcast down the road, but the kid from Boston College is going to be real good teams as well. So that was a focus for this, for the Packers scouts in front of us. Go get some guys. That's what happens a lot of times. You draft guys. I mean, 3 years of covering, you know, you draft guys, linebackers and corners. That's usually the core of your special team, safeties. But you draft guys that were stars in college who never really did much special team stuff. And then you ask them to go out and play special teams. And they're like, okay, but that's how they make the team, right? So they're back. But they really don't have a lot of – even though they're good athletes and they're good players, maybe they become – they're not used to it. They're learning how to play special teams on the job. This guy apparently played special teams and was very good at. He's going to be a good. I mean, that's what he's going to come in and be. As far as him, I mean, I'm surprised he had such a low athletic thing. I mean, I don't like that. But I don't know about him ever being. helpful. And I don't know. I mean, that size and speed doesn't add up to a great corner. I mean, I got he's smart. He's instinctive. App State. I mean, it's not Florida, Georgia, Clemson, Ohio State, obviously. But you know, I hear my believe it or not, there's a lot of people from App State that live in Myrtle Beach now. People that went to App State, so I hear a lot about App State, and they're always competitive on their level. Mm-hmm. I mean, Coastal beat them this year because Coastal was really good. But that's a good football program. So he is coming. It's a smaller program, but it's a good program. So I mean. I think he'll always be like your fourth or fifth corner kind of guy. If he has to play, you know, he probably can. He won't kill you, hopefully, but he'll be a specialty. He'll be one of your top. I'm trying to think. The Packers had a guy like him years ago. I can't remember who it was now. That he was really good on special teams, but whenever they had to put him in a game, you kind of said, "Ooh,
Chris Banjo."
Yeah, I was going to say
safety. Yeah, he hit him too, but there was another corner. It'll come to me as we talk more. Maybe let me get my Packer media guy out. Now that you guys take over for now.
yeah. I imagine Mark having every Packer media guide since the 1980s at his.
I have Eagle media guide from the
1980s. I just wanted to. A lot of them now, but. I just wanted to reemphasize what Mark was saying about the special teams because he mentioned Gene Charles and McDuffie. Amari Rodgers, he has ample punt and kick return experience. Eric Stokes as well. He was a standout special teams at Georgia. So that was definitely an area of emphasis in this draft, not only contributing, you know, hopefully contributing to the obvious offensive and defensive side of the ball, but what can they do on special teams right away? Because like Mark said, like we all know, this team needs a serious turnaround. And honestly, correct me if I'm wrong, because maybe they did, but they're fortunate that they didn't lose any games last year because of that.
I mean, we talked about it every week, Paul, when we were, you know, doing like game preview.
Yeah, games. Right.
Well, yeah, the offense should be able to score and the defense, they should be able to do a pretty good job. And on the special teams, I don't know what's going to happen there. And, they allowed two punt returns for touchdowns. Now, like, luckily, they were against the worst team in the league.
Right.
Which made that game much closer than it was supposed to be. Mm-hmm. And then against the Eagles, who were one of the worst teams in the league, and again, made that game. I mean, that game was over, and all of a sudden they made a punt back. Now you're like, oh, Jesus. And then Aaron Jones breaks the long run and put it out. But, I mean, those games shouldn't have been – I shouldn't have had to been worried about those games. But special teams allowed them, you know, forced them to do that. I mean, that's just not good.
But when your initial thought is – just kick it off through the end zone. Just don't even field the punt. Yeah. Just take a knee.
Out of bounds.
Just kick it out of. Just punt it out of bounds. You know you're in a tough spot.
Yeah. Am I mistaken? Because brought up losing.
Bush.
Losing. Bush. Oh, yeah. Man, if he became that, I wouldn't be upset with that.
Right. I mean, there was a guy that, you know, he was your fourth or fifth corner, but very good on special teams.
Right.
Mm-hmm. That's who this guy is. See, the Packers drafted – somebody that was somebody like they drafted Sam Shields, then they got Corey Linsley, then they got Randall Cobb. I don't know who the fourth round pick is. Slayton Gilbert Brown, and now they got there
you go. Just rebuilding the dream team.
There you go. Was the Colts game this past year? That was MVS's fumble was on offense, right?
No. Yes.
Yeah, okay. But Shepard or Taylor had a fumble on a kickoff.
Right. Okay, that's what it was. For some reason, I was trying
and
to.
And that led to 7 points. So that's why I hesitated as I was saying it, because I was thinking about that as it was coming out.
Well, all of those different all of the different special teams traumas just kind of run into run into one big long one this past not even this past year, but yeah, just the full year. And that's what people, you know. The regular fan, I don't know if they – I don't want to say doesn't get, but it's kind of – you know, you kind of have to play. You can't just draft the guys that are going to start every single year. You know, you can't just draft guys that are going to play in the first 22, you know. You have to – the last – they always talk about that last third of the roster, like churning the last third of the roster to get guys in there, just get bodies that can compete and be competitive and do what you need. Special teams is never going to change. The issues are never going to change no matter who you put back in there as coach. It does not matter. Unless you have the guys that are going to go back there and can execute and do what the coaches are telling them to and can actually and play up to that level, then it's never going to change. And so, you know, picks like this, while you know you may be you may never see Gene Charles make an interception or make, you know, a game saving tackle. I can guarantee that at least this year you're going to see Gene Charles making some kind of an impact, at least on special teams. Hopefully it's a little bit more of a positive one than in recent years.
I have a quick question for you, Mark. Yeah. I don't really have the answer to this, but what do you think, just because it's gone year after year, different players, different coaches, but what do you think is at the core of the special teams issues? The only reason I can maybe think of is, and I don't even know if this is a good one, but because the roster is so top heavy, when you think about the contracts that they have, the first round picks that they're relying more on back end of the roster guys, which I know is kind of common, but I mean, do you have any sort of guess at what the long-term issue it might be?
Well, again, and I'm not there, so I don't know, but like I know from covering the Eagles for years, and Eagles were, they were terrible. They were terrible for years and years. And then they hired Harbaugh as their special teams coach. And they also spent a lot of, I'll give Andy Reid some credit here. They spent, during Andy Reid's years as Eagles head coach, they spent more practice time on special teams than any other coach I was around. Mm-hmm. Chip Kelly did as well, but he just followed. So I mean, he just kind of did what they were doing, maybe. But I mean, Andy had special team practices some days where, like during camp, and when it was like two practices a day, or even during the season some days, but it would just be special. Like the other guys were off, and it would just be the guys on special teams out practicing. So he devoted – so that's part of it. I don't know what the Packers do that. I don't know how much time per day they devote to special teams. And then you need guys – like, again, I got to compare it to the Eagles. That's who I covered. They had a guy, Ike Reese, who was a backup linebacker, not a bad backup linebacker. He started when somebody got hurt. He was like their fourth or fifth guy. But he was a great special teams player. And he didn't – he understood that and kind of wore that, like, okay, yeah, our special teams are one of the best in the league, and I'm the best guy on our special team. So, and you know, he talked about it. He was, you know, now he's, it's funny, now he's the drive time radio host in Philly. But I mean, he, you know, you need guys that most guys on special teams want to become starters and then get off special teams, but you need a couple guys that just know their role. And no, this is all right. I'm going to play in the league 10 years. I'm going to be a great, you know, like the guy, the Bills always have guys like that. It seems, you know, Tasker was one of them, right? I mean, they know their role. I'm going to be the best special teams player in the league. That's what I'm going to be. I know I'm like, if you're this kid from App State, right? John Charles, you know, you're never going to be ahead of Alexander and Stokes and probably somebody, but probably a couple other guys as well. So he has to take that attitude. Like, all right, I'm going to be a great special teams player. I'm going to make this 30 first ranked special teams into the top 10. And because special teams is an attitude. I mean, every NFL player can tackle. They can all run. They can all. That's all. I mean, that's what special teams is about. But you got to have that. It's a mental game on special teams. You can't be out there thinking, "Oh, I'm on special teams and I can't. I want to be playing. I'm on." No, you got to take it as like I mentioned, Ike Reese saying no. We have the best special teams in the league, and I'm the reason why.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
that makes perfect sense.
Yeah, and I mean, it's a little bit more insight into the special team, because I've said it before on this podcast a couple of times, and I'll say it again, mainly because I think it's a funny joke and it gets a little shock value. when I look at special teams, I look at it like pornography. And the way that I mean that is,
I want to hear that.
I don't know, Mark. You probably know this a little bit. I took yeah, journalism classes, and you know that's the famous like ruling for the classification of pornography. You, there's no real definition for it, but when I see it, I know what it is. And bad special teams, I can't tell you why or how, but I know it when I see it. And that's about as far deep as into special teams as I can get.
I didn't know where we were going to end up with how that started. Yeah, that was well done. I'll give you that. That was my favorite.
It's my favorite sports analogy. But you're exactly right. It takes those guys, and it's a very fluid, it's more fluid than, you know, than offense and defense, really, because there you have plays. You can tell guys, run this route, block this guy. Special teams, though, it's fluid. It's in the process of happening. Like, you just have to read and react, and it takes players like these guys here that we've been talking about. I love that we were talking about these two guys, and we've spent probably close to almost 10 minutes just talking about special teams. But I think that it fits because that's where a lot of these guys will have that biggest impact. Probably more Jane Charles than Slayton, but. So as we kind of wrap up here, guys.
To what Paul was asking about, why special teams are bad, or some are better than others. Part of it too is what makes an offensive line good is the same five guys playing it week after week, staying together. Right. It's a continuity, right? Same with special teams. If you're switching guys in and out every week, that's not a good thing. If you can identify right from the beginning of the year, right when camp breaks and you're ready to start, these are my 11 guys that are going to be on the punt team. Mm-hmm. These are my 11 guys that are going to be on the kickoff team. And then you kind of stay with them for most of the year. Again, injuries are going to force things to happen. That's on offense and defense as well. But if you can keep that same core unit together, I think you'll have a much better success rate on special teams as well. Because, again, continuity is important. And knowing that, you know, you don't have to worry about, you know, if John Charles is always out there and he knows he's next to Turner, the wide receiver, right? Mm-hmm. He knows what he's going to do. And he knows what he's going to do. They're going to, you know, they know each other. Now, if you're switching guys in and out, you don't know each other. And just like an offensive line being together and knowing, you know, Bakhtiari knows what Jenkins is going to do and Jenkins knew what Lindsey was going to do. And it all works together. It's the same kind of concept there as well.
Yeah, makes sense. So guys, as we wrap up, are looking at these two fifth round picks. Just final thoughts on the picks here. Just kind of the draft. I mean, we've said it before. All of us have said it here multiple times, even today, that this is exactly how we kind of wanted the draft to play out in the fifth round. You know, you're basically taking stabs at potential prospects, or, you know, guys that you think could maybe fit a specific role or do a specific thing. So just the overall take on the fifth round, anything that we've kind of left out, Mark?
I think we covered it all. Like Slayton, I thought, again, as the draft unfolded, I don't think there was a better player, not just, you know, for that position, but I mean, he was probably the best player available. I hate using that cliche term, but he was one of the highest ranked players still on the board, I believe, when they took him. I was following it kind of close at that point, but not as close as I did the first couple of rounds. But I thought that was a good pick. I'm like, wow, okay, he's still there. They got him. I don't know who else was still around. But Gene Charles, I'll be honest, I didn't do as much homework on him because I didn't have him as one of the top corners or anything. I'm trying to think if there's somebody else that they could have taken. But again, when I heard more about him, my first thought was what we said, you know, they want some special teams guys. Because their first, other than Rodgers as a return guy, I think Stokes might be starting by week two. So I don't think they're going to have him on special teams a lot. I love Stokes. The center is not going to be on special teams. When they went into day three, I think their little meeting that morning before the draft started was, hey, it's time to – we helped the offense. We helped the defense. Now let's help some. Now let's get some help for special teams. Mm-hmm. And they did. I think the running back that they took late might be you might see him doing some special teams work.
Paul,
For me, I'll take a little broader approach because I think we hit on the big points with these two. Mm-hmm. I was a big fan of this draft. Like I said when we first started this episode, it wasn't flashy by any means, but for what the Green Bay Packers needed, and I think that gets overlooked when you listen to the national media and all that stuff and everyone who has their opinions on the draft, but for what the Green Bay Packers needed, they checked just about all those boxes. Two cornerbacks, as we've talked about, and hopefully what plays out is an infusion of talent on special teams, a true nose tackle, linebacker depth, running back three, a wide receiver who fits, who's really tailor-made for this Matt LaFleur offense and that slot gadget role. I mean, if we had before the draft discussed our 3, 4, 5 biggest needs on this team, offensive line depth too. I don't know how I forgot that one, but if we would have discussed our 3, 4, 5 biggest needs on this team, they checked those boxes. So I was a big fan for just addressing those needs. If there's immediate impact players, but also moves that were made to plan for the future. So all around, like I said, it's not flashy by any means, but for what the Green Bay Packers needed, I thought that they did an excellent job.
Yeah. I got a second. Both of those, I think they hit everything right. Like you, Paul, like you said at the beginning, accurately described the draft, not super sexy and flashy, but decent enough. They did everything basically they needed to do in this draft. Didn't blow socks off, but did what they need to. And I think the fifth round here, these two guys fall into that narrative very easily, especially in the being day three guys. More day three guys to break down tomorrow. Mike, Gage, and Matt are going to take a look at the sixth and seventh round picks of the Green Bay Packers. So make sure you're checking out that tomorrow. Check us out every single day as we jump back into regular off-season mode, kind of go back to our regular schedule. I know I said it last week, but this is the last week that us three are going to be together now. Yeah, well, we'll see. We'll see.
Who knows what's going through Andy Herman's mind these days? We don't know.
The man, he's like
a mystery. He's like the Aaron Rodgers of Packaday. He's a mystery. We don't know.
An enigma wrapped up in a quandary is Andy Herman. But yeah, we're going to jump back into the regular kind of schedule here as the Packers move into the off season. I mean, Jesus, I can't even believe it. We're almost to the halfway point of May, almost, and we're this close away from OTAs and mini camps starting here soon. It's hard to imagine that we're getting this close to having actual football again, just a few months away. So make sure you're checking out the show the rest of the off season. Follow us on Twitter at Packaday Podcast. Make sure that you're checking out Andy on the YouTube channel as well. He does those daily videos on YouTube just completely by himself because he's a madman and loves this kind of stuff, and he puts all this content out there for you guys. So we hope you enjoy it. Hope you enjoy listening to us here on the Packaday Podcast. Paul, Mark, do you want to let people know where they can find you out on the socials and anywhere else and anything that you want to promote?
Yeah, you can find me on Twitter at Paul_Brettl. That's Bretl. Dairyland Express, I've been going through or just starting to go through each of the draft picks, taking a closer look, what the draft analysts have to say about them. And then at Cheesehead TV on Friday, I took a look at the idea of will Jair Alexander see more slot snaps in the Joe Barry defense?
Very good. Mark?
You can find me on Twitter, Mark Eckel, ECKEL08. On Packer Report, I have two stories up this past week. One was I had a long time NFL executive and personnel break down each of the Packers picks and how they would fit the Packers. And let me just tell you, he thinks a lot more of the players than some of the media did. I mean, I'm seeing people like, first of all, you can never grade a draft because that's just stupid. but I'm seeing like C and C plus.
I know, right?
Because they don't realize how good Eric Stokes is as number one. But I don't want to go on that. But anyway, he loves Stokes. He loved Rodgers. He has a bunch of good stuff. Packer fans could read that and be happy about it. And then I talked to Carlo Kemp, the linebacker, or they're going to make him a linebacker from Michigan. I know you guys don't like Michigan, Ohio State, Wisconsin here, but the Packers seem to like Michigan because they do. Pretty interesting story. Pretty real interesting guy. He was a two-time captain at Michigan, two-year captain, which in Michigan's 141-year history, they've only had 10 players that were captains for 2 years, and he's one of them. So he's a pretty – players like him. He's one of his best friends is Rashawn Gary. So that he's pretty excited to be joining him again. And they're actually going to ask him to do the same thing that they asked Gary to do. He played with his hand on the ground at Michigan, but they're going to make him a stand-up linebacker. He has to lose about 12 to 15 pounds, he said. But he said it shouldn't be a problem. And this is a real interesting guy. It was a pretty good story. His uncle is Chuck Pagano.
Oh, really?
And wow. It was funny. I didn't use this. It didn't fit in the story, so but I'll tell you guys. So I said to myself, "Oh, it's a good thing Chuck retired, because you would have had to beat him twice a year, you know, if you went the Bears." You're like, "Yeah, I wouldn't want to do that to Uncle Chuck." So, so yeah, good kid. I thought it turned out to be a pretty good story. That's up there now. Next week, I have no idea what I'm going to do yet. We'll see what happens. Well, the schedule is on Wednesday, right?
Yeah, maybe just take a break, go hang out on your beach for a little bit, and
we have 5 days a week.
Yeah. That's going to happen regardless, Dan.
Yeah, right. That's true. Yeah, regardless of what's happening.
It only takes an hour to write a story. I still got like eight more hours out on the beach. I'm thinking about bringing my laptop to the beach. I don't have to even break. I can just write from the beach. I've interviewed guys on the beach in
the past. Come on, Mark. We're already down and out about living in the Northwest.
You brought it up.
I know I did. You're right. I guess I'm trying to live vicariously through Mark's life at this point now. You can find me on Twitter at DK all the way. Just stuff over there. Not doing too much now outside of our Pack-A-Day podcast episodes. I'll be back to our regular every other Tuesday schedule. I'll be with Janelle Mackey and Eli Berkovitz, now a new addition to our trio, on Tuesdays. And our first episode will come out this coming Tuesday. So make sure you check us out here. All three of us doing more stuff with the Pack-A-Day podcast. Like I said, follow us the rest of the off season. Get ready for the regular season here coming up in just a few months. But until we talk again, everybody, stay safe and go Pack-A-Day.